Una pata de tubo. No es fácil andar una pata de plástico. Que duele, me echa sangre.
Norman Saúl Varela, uno de los fundadores de la Asociación de Migrantes Retornados con Discapacidad, declaró al diario La Jornada que en México le hacen el trabajo sucio a Estados Unidos. México ya no se llama México, ahora se llama el país de las pesadillas, porque le hacen el trabajo sucio a Estados Unidos, sentenció. Continuó diciendo que desde que los migrantes pisan México se siente una transformación inmensa, porque aquí dejamos nuestra carne y nuestra sangre. Norman Saúl Varela, de la Asociación de Migrantes Retornados con Discapacidad de Honduras, dijo estar decidido a cualquier cosa con tal de que lo reciba el presidente Peña Nieto.
Nosotros no nos vamos a ir si no tenemos contestación. Los 15 miembros de la Asociación de Migrantes Retornados a mi redis, hemos llegado a la conclusión de que vamos a quedarnos, no importa si morimos acá esperando que él nos atienda. Lo que queremos es que tengamos paz cuando pasemos por aquí y un poco más de seguridad, porque en realidad no existe la seguridad en por la vía migratoria, lo que es el tren.
En Estados Unidos, 100 mujeres concluyeron un ayuno de 48 horas en la capital del país para presionar a los legisladores a llenarse de valor y voluntad política y aprobar una reforma integral a las leyes de migración. La acción formó parte de 80 eventos en 35 estados y la Ciudad de México, donde 1.500 mujeres ayunaron para poner un fin a las deportaciones y hacer realidad la llamada reforma migratoria. La activista María Galván formó parte del grupo de mujeres que ayunaron en Washington, D.C. por 48 horas.
El objetivo es alzar la voz, que las mujeres tenemos poder y como se está viendo ahorita tantas deportaciones, las mujeres están quedando solas sin sus esposos y están siendo madres y padres, están saliendo a trabajar, las que no trabajaban, que se quedaban en las casas, tienen que salir a trabajar por las deportaciones de sus esposos. Entonces queremos hacer saber a los congresistas el dolor que está pasando la mujer actualmente a falta de una reforma migratoria. Queremos que los sueldos sean iguales porque la mujer recibe, aunque haga el mismo trabajo, recibe menos salario que un hombre. Cuando tú estás en ayuno, es un esfuerzo, ¿verdad? Porque pues es difícil quedarte sin comer tanto tiempo, pero cuando ellos nos visitaban y nos daban ánimo, pues hacía que sintiéramos que las cosas están valiendo la pena. Y la verdad que ni siquiera pensamos en comida, no la pasamos tantas visitas que tuvimos. Solamente hubo una que no nos agradó y realmente no supimos qué es lo que fue a hacer el congresista que se apareció ahí, porque en lugar de darnos ánimo, nos dejó un poco mal de enojo. Mario Díaz-Balart, él llegó con una prepotencia que pidió que le abrieran la puerta por otro lado, no quiso entrar por donde normalmente entramos todos. Él pidió una puerta exclusiva, no sé, iba como escondiéndose. Subió al podio, pero no nos dio la cara realmente, no nos escuchó, no quiso escuchar ninguna historia, subió como 3 minutos y dijo que siguiéramos en la lucha, que siguiéramos haciendo lo que quisiéramos hacer, pero que él ni había firmado ni va a firmar nada de lo que está ahorita. Entonces, pues si él no nos quiere conocer, no quiere saber de nuestras historias, realmente no sé qué fue a hacer el señor ahí, pero ni eso nos va a parar, al contrario, nos da más ánimo de seguir adelante.
Parte del ayuno de 48 horas incluyó el acto de llenar una canasta de valor con mensajes de ayunantes y sus simpatizantes, que después hicieron llegar a las y los legisladores del país. El grupo de mujeres fue visitado por congresistas como Lucille Roybal-Allard, Susan Delvin y Linda Sánchez. El ayuno de mujeres por las familias fue una colaboración del Movimiento por una Reforma de Migración Justa, We Belong Together, y el Sindicato Internacional de Empleados de Servicios en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
José atiende los jardines, parecen de Disneyland. Maneja una troca vieja sin la licencia.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
El hielo anda suelto por esas calles. Nunca se sabe cuándo nos va a tocar. ¿Qué hora?
Jueves iniciará el diálogo formal entre líderes de la derecha en Venezuela y el gobierno de Nicolás Maduro. Desde el inicio de las protestas violentas en febrero, el gobierno socialista había llamado a la oposición venezolana a sentarse a dialogar y así lo hicieron algunos sectores. El encuentro al que acudirá el gobernador del estado Miranda, Enrique Capriles, contará con la intermediación de cancilleres de la UNASUR y un representante del Vaticano.
Muchos miran con asombro a esta banda por el centro de Caracas. No es tiempo de carnaval, pero trabajadores del sector transporte confían en cualquier momento como propicio para que los tambores llamen a la paz.
Hoy estamos aquí promoviendo la paz, apoyando la misión transporte, la cual quiere unión, unión y más unión.
Celebran que la llamada Mesa de la Unidad Democrática, integrada por partidos opositores, por fin haya aceptado la convocatoria al diálogo del presidente Nicolás Maduro.
Nosotros, como un buen venezolano, nosotros llamamos a todo el resto, ese 5% que queda por ahí todavía guarimbiando, que se venga con... que no importa, que no comulgue con el gobierno, pero que sea paz, vale, aquí caemos todos y aquí podemos vivir todos en sana paz.
Pero al mismo tiempo exigen diálogo con justicia. Para ellos no deben quedar impunes las 40 muertes tras el llamado de sectores de extrema derecha venezolana a derrocar el gobierno.
Ese saldo de muerte, alguien tiene que responder por eso. Más sin embargo, saludamos la iniciativa de estar, de sentarse a conversar, algo que el presidente Nicolás Maduro lo ha estado promoviendo desde hace 2 meses que comenzó esta situación de terrorismo en nuestro país.
Lo cierto es que la mayoría de las y los venezolanos apuesta a la paz y la estabilidad y rechaza el caos y la violencia. Así lo indican las mediciones del último monitoreo trimestral de la agencia venezolana Interlaces.
El símbolo de la paz para un país que está reclamando estabilidad y esperanza es muy poderoso. Tanto así que el 67% de los venezolanos cuestiona o está en desacuerdo con la decisión de la Mesa de la Unidad Democrática y de los partidos de oposición de no participar en estas conferencias por la paz. A pesar de que hay una duda expectante con relación a sus resultados, la iniciativa es respaldada.
Según Interlaces, el 68% de los encuestados considera muy necesaria o algo necesaria la presencia internacional para fomentar el diálogo y la paz. Sin embargo, el 60% de los consultados considera que es más importante que el gobierno dialogue con los empresarios que con los sectores políticos. Otra muestra de la mayoritaria disposición al diálogo en esta nación es que 59 de los 60 alcaldes y gobernadores de oposición aceptaron la invitación del presidente Nicolás Maduro para participar la próxima semana en un foro taller sobre el llamado gobierno de calle para tratar temas urgentes de la sociedad venezolana. Pero antes, gobierno y oposición, se verán nuevamente las caras en diálogo formal y público. El único gobernador opositor negado una y otra vez a asistir a las conferencias de paz con todos los sectores de la sociedad, finalmente confirmó su asistencia al Palacio de Miraflores.
Nosotros nunca vamos a ir a un pacto, a negociar lo que no podemos negociar, el mandato de un pueblo, pero sí podemos, en el marco de la Constitución, ponernos de acuerdo para las grandes tareas y desafíos de nuestra patria.
Mientras, el país y el mundo esperan que el diálogo anunciado dé pasos concretos en la construcción de un modelo de coexistencia que ponga fin a la violencia. Rolando Segura, Telesur, Caracas, Venezuela.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Telesur de Venezuela, a la Asociación Latinoamericana de Educación Radiofónica, ALER, al diario La Jornada y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Y Y gracias, Informativo Pacífica. Entonces, la programa Bathrobe Spears Broadsides en inglés, mea culpa. And it's coming up in English, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the April 10th show. Stay tuned.
It's a question, who wants a plan? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. A president raises a question, who wants a plan? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land?
Indeed, a lot of people this morning had that feeling. On the levee, we did some coffee serving and interview taking and form filing, getting reports from people coming off the pedestrian bridge near Highway 1 about between 8 and 9, 9 and 10 in the morning to see if, is it true? Are homeless being treated as a different class of people than ordinary human beings? Are they being subject to unusual kinds of harassment that the rest of the community does not have to face? Well, you probably know the answer already if you listen to this show regularly, but you'll get some direct testimony as we go through the show. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. And the name of the show comes from a bathrobe, which I wear in kind of solidarity with people coming off the kind of rubbing the sleep out of their eyes as they get up and having this essentially have no choice other than to sleep outside. And that is sort of the elephant in the bedroom that the community in its rush, at least some of the community, to jacket homeless people with the criminal jacket is ignoring studiously, intensely, passionately, and furiously, making it homelessness, you see, isn't a function of lack of housing, it's a function of mental illness, it's a function of bad choices, it's a function of alcoholism, a function of drug use, it's not a function of no place to go. Homelessness, you know, that's the obvious is ignored for the simple reason that there are some folks who believe these people just do not belong in this community, and they must go somewhere else, and they've created all kinds of theories about how incredibly wonderful the social services are in order that enable people and encourage people to come here instead of the usual ties, the climate that's here, the traditional kind of roosting or passing ground that people use this place for when they're young and pass through traveling. And people who are here who can't pay the exorbitant rents as they escalate and lose their jobs or can't get them with the sub living wage standard that remains the rule here in Santa Cruz, and they fall into homelessness. Anyway, that's the story that keeps being repeated endlessly. I'm going to begin this particular show, and I want to remind you, you are listening to 101.3 FM, in case you just sort of tuned in on the dial, 101.3 FM. Keep listening to free radio here in Santa Cruz. We are pirate radio. We are unapologetic. We are unbeholden to any commercial sponsors or non-commercial foundations or government grants. we exist essentially through the dues that the members pay in order to come into the studio and use the ailing and aging equipment here. And if you want to be a part of this collective, other than simply listen to it, you can, of course, call in. Call-in number here if you want to be on the air and do some reporting as to what's going on or ask some questions or make some comments about what you've heard is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. You can also go to our website, which you may already be at if you're listening to this program distantly, and we can be heard all over the world, at freakradio.org. In case you aren't listening to it on the freakradio.org and you want to know how to do it, you go to freakradio.org and then click on the red dot on top of the transmitter icon, and that will put you through to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Nice secret to know. I didn't know that for a long time. Anyway, let's proceed to pick up from where I was playing on Sunday. I went up to Berkeley and interviewed a man who owns Fred's grocery store, a little grocery store, kind of a family store, right at Dwight Way and Telegraph, or thereabouts, before the Telegraph Avenue becomes a one-way street. He's been around for decades, and you'll hear some of this interview repeated from the end of last show, but I wanted to finish it up, and here it is.
So I'm talking to an owner of one of the stores. Can I mention the name of your store? Fred's Market. Can I mention your name? Kamal here, who's been here since 1979. He's seen rents escalate from $1,100 to $5,400 now? $5,200. And he's also, it's kind of depressing for him because the people that he knew back in the 60s and 70s are gone. And essentially the rents, I think that's what you're saying, Kamal, are driving people away. And you were even suggesting that your store, which is really kind of a landmark, it's, I don't know of any other store on the street right now. I'm looking all around. UPS store,
Blessed
hats. Which is still there?
Blessed Garnet, the herb shop.
The herb shop is still there.
Mose.
And Moe's. Moe's is there, and Shakespeare's.
Shakespeare's.
There's a couple of stores left, but on this block, I don't know if we have anything but you. Is there, you say there's a hat, the hat shop was there before?
Yeah.
Because I know there used to be, you know, hard castles across the street, a cafe, and so forth. We're looking, we're on Telegraph looking across the street here at Dwight Way.
Young truck bats to the...
Right, but I don't think they were there 20 or 30 years ago. I mean,
they were.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you would know. You've been up here. I know they used to have comic stores up here, Chinese restaurants, and I guess there's a Chinese restaurant over there. Jews for Jesus, yeah. Hare Krishna, Moonies.
Boys.
And reminiscing up here.
Books. It's gone.
Part of this is a nostalgia trip for us aging folks, but some of it is also pertinent commentary for people who are young, anybody actually, who understands what's driving away a certain class of people is the rent profiteering and real estate speculation. And it's happening here in Santa Cruz too, of course.
So, are you going to be staying? Do you think you're likely to move on?
No, I will stay for a little while, see what happens.
I mean, are you... you have to raise your prices when they raise the rents, right?
Well, of course.
How does that impact the old... You have some poor people who are clientele. I saw a man come in who sells street newspapers, Al, just a moment ago. Is this... How does this impact the people who are... poor here?
It's very hard to adjust to that. Really very, very hard. And I hate that. That's part of doing business. When things goes up, you know, you have to raise the prices. You can't help it.
Now, was your family in this kind of business over in Middle East, in Palestine?
No, it was in San Francisco, 1970.
And what's your sense about San Francisco has changed? Have you been over there much?
No, I don't go there very often.
Kind of stick close to Berkeley?
Close to Berkeley, yeah.
And is this a family business, or are these folks just...
it's a family business. It's my family. This is my daughter. I have six children. They help me here. Me and my wife. We all work, chip in.
There aren't many family businesses left here in Berkeley that I would guess. I mean, it looks like a lot of corporate shit all over the place.
Yeah, that's true. We have Beach Coffee right in the corner, and I don't know, Baker Pastry, some kind of new pizza place up there. Yeah, UPS store, a lot of corporate stores around here now. You got CVS down the street, Walgreens up the street.
Because you're 4 blocks from the university, and you still got a lot of student trade here?
Yeah, there's plenty of student trade.
As we stand here, it looks like almost every... Well, these look like more like high school students than college students.
Yeah, so much mixed.
I've always enjoyed coming to your store to buy my poison of choice, red licorice and Dove chocolate and everything else. So I don't see you having jujubes anymore, though. What's with that, anyway?
Well, there's nothing there.
There's no jujubes. If you want to keep up with the 7-Eleven, you got to get the jujubes.
Well, I'm proud to see you, because you're one of the left. You're one of the people I remember in Berkeley for many, many years. When I see you, I'm proud of myself. Proud to see you. I'm very happy.
I'm not much of a big customer of yours.
No.
But occasionally you would come in.
But, you know.
It's nice to see people you remember. It's a link to the past. And,
exactly. That's the history.
Well, I want to say hang in there unless you want to, but... I'm glad to see you're still here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Kamal.
You too.
All right. Additionally, I want to note, Kamal has mentioned that there's very little shoplifting in his store. And yours is the only kind of grocery store, I guess it's 7-Eleven a couple blocks down. And there used to be one over there many years ago, two blocks up on Telegraph toward the university. But you have not experienced an armed robbery while you've been here, you said.
No, never.
That's good. I mean, that kind of says something, doesn't it? I'm not quite sure.
Everybody in the neighborhood respects me, look out for me. So that's part of the whole thing. I'm a community kind of store, so a lot of people watch out, keep eyes on our store. So that's part of the neighborhood. You know, it's kind of clientele we have. I'm part of the community, so they watch out for me. Which is really good.
Say something for free radio?
That's one thing to keep me from not leaving here.
How do you like working here?
It's good, helping out the family. I mean, we got a roof over our head and family that cares and loves us. I mean, supports them as much as they can. Living at home with a big family.
How long have you worked here?
Since a little girl, running around in diapers.
How old are you now?
I am 25.
So you've seen changes here since
big time.
What have been the changes you've noticed?
Different crowds of people that come in and go, you know, left and right, from drug dealers to criminals to homeless to students to all different types.
Now, how do they treat you as a woman here? Do you get treated differently, you think?
Oh, definitely. Get a different variety of people, some good, some bad. I've seen it all as a little girl growing up here.
Did you feel safe here?
I do. Definitely, because it's always two people working at the same time. It's not just one person. And it's like a community. It's like we have the love from our neighbors, the community, the school, the Cal students, even the homeless people up at the park, at the People's Park. They all care. It's like we're a family. It's a unity. Yeah.
Have you ever been robbed here?
No. Within the over 30 years we've been here, thank God, no.
And is that the case with the stores next door and down the street? Is that generally true in this neighborhood, or particularly true because of Fred's Market and its reputation?
I think it's the reputation. It's the love that we have from our people and the community.
Anything you want to say to the folks in Santa Cruz, or I'll be playing this probably tomorrow, or I should say Sunday?
And that was Berkeley, about a month ago.
I just wasn't listening. No surprise if you know me well. As we're walking toward the train station, there's a whispering rainfall across the boulevard. You slip your hand in mine. In the distance, the train calls. And the kid who has this habit of dreaming sometimes gets me in trouble too. But the truth is, I could no more self-dreaming than I could make them all come true. Then I could make them all come true.
Yeah, that was Peter, Paul, and Mary from their album Lifelines, where they're actually playing with other musicians. Let's hear something now from the Food Not Bombs, a meal from March 29th, getting a little closer to the present. And eventually we'll be getting actually to today's events, where we interviewed lots of folks about how it is to be outside as we poured coffee and took reports.
Well, it is about 4:15 on Saturday, the 29th of March, 2014. It looks like rainy day weather. A couple out here with a Food Not Bombs sign in the rain, or the sprinkle. Well, here we have two erstwhile Food Not Bombs workers here. Any interesting comments for Free Radio?
Well, I would like to just say that Food Not Bombs is not a charity organization. It is supposed to be ultimately a potluck shared between the community members, and it's supposed
pot?
To...
Pot? You mean there's dope involved?
No, I mean, that's not necessarily involved.
Luck? You mean it's a matter of whether it's haphazard?
What? Wait, what was that?
Pay no attention to me. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to bring solidarity to the community, and we're not just about feeding the homeless. We're about feeding everybody, and everybody should bring dishes. We're vegan, so you can bring your own dishes, whatever you like, but try not to share anything but vegan food. And we just try to have a good fun, have a good time.
And of course, you serve every Saturday and Sunday at 4 o'clock near the main post office in downtown Santa Cruz?
Yes, sir.
And what about your meetings? Where are they, and when, and how, and so forth?
Oh, they're at 6 o'clock p.m. At the Red Church, across the street from the Farmer's Market.
Every
Wednesday, Tuesday, sorry.
And we've been talking with that fount of knowledge.
Holly Mayer.
Thank you, Holly. Well, the folks are whooping it up here on the steps of the post office under the eave, as it does seem to be potentially drippy out here. How's the food? Reports from the street of any kind? Nothing particular. We have a little music going. And
folks were clustered around the eaves of the post office, which previously, some months back, had resulted in the post office officials calling the police, demanding they leave. And there was a similar, I guess, concern expressed, you'll be hearing it on the tape, on this particular occasion. But generally, Food Not Bombs serves on the sidewalk, slightly adjacent to the post office, in a very large open space. It's probable that their setup is illegal under the municipal code because it's more than 12 square feet. And it's in an area where they don't give permits. There are five areas, according to Parks and Rec, where they actually provide permits for larger displays and so forth. Although I guess merchants can get permits wherever the hell they want, as is the impression I get, if they have to get permits at all for their large signs on the sidewalk that clutter up the sidewalk. Or I did seem to be doing that some weeks ago when I was walking downtown. In the studio with me is sometime co-host and medical advisor, Michael O'Grady. Michael, you want to see if that mic is working? Mike, meet the mic, that sort of thing.
Are you hearing me?
Say something.
Am I coming through?
Unfortunately. I mean, fortunately, yes, you are coming through, Michael.
Okay.
Welcome. I know you, we're going to talk more about the work we did earlier today out, or the fun we had, or the whatever we were doing. Near the footbridge, we're passing out coffee and chatting with people about, you know, what kinds of experiences they're having outside in terms of the crackdown in Santa Cruz. But let's hear a little bit more from the Saturday that was. It might have been the Sunday, but I think it was Saturday. It was a Saturday that I came down there specifically because during rainy times you have to keep an eye on the police and the post office, because they start getting very antsy under the illusion and delusion that the public space on the steps of the post office somehow is not public space, but is owned by the postal officials. That's always a sort of a correction you have to correct. And the way you correct it is by ignoring their threats and, you know, offering them some soup and patting them on the back. Of course, you may be accused of assault and battery, but that's one of those risks you have to take.
Have they ever come out and?
They always come out and
really?
Do and demand people leave. At least one particular official. At least that's what I hear when folks set up on the steps, which they do because of the rain, you know, the sprinkle and so forth. I think you were there on that day.
I probably was.
You got to remember to talk into the mic. I know I'm exciting to talk to, but pretend I'm the little face on the microphone.
Okay.
Pretend you made those lips are mine. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's hear some more, unless there's something you want to say about any of that. Don't even think you have to say anything.
I just have a sheet here with some stats on it. We can talk about them later. But
okay, let's do that.
They're tightening up on the homeless all over the place.
Big time, yes.
It's not just Santa Cruz, you know.
Well, the answer is we have to respond to that, and that's what we're trying to do. And
exactly.
And that's what I'm hoping members out there in the community are doing, is to, shall we say, correct the misguided crackdowns that are happening elsewhere. We can't do anything about it elsewhere, but we certainly could do something about it here.
Yeah.
I think by, you know, being in solidarity with homeless people, shining the light of publicity on abuses that are going on, trying to talk sense to the rest of the community. I don't think you can talk much sense to the Take Back Santa Cruz crowd, but you can talk sense to the community that they are propagandizing, and that the city council is making its statements to. Anyway, I'm going to play some more from this Food Not Bombs tape. And if you want to call in, you can. Our call-in number is 427-3772, 831-427-3772.
Federal display devices, but not on public property, so it's not technically illegal. Hey, Abby. Illegally posting something to the post office wall.
Police might come.
Indeed. Are we next show?
Yeah, they said we can have food. But they said we can't have the literature table.
What? You must
but
be kidding.
Advertisement? It's not the police. It's the guy said it was private property. The same guy from the post office that comes out every time.
This Food Not Bombs, A.S.
Yeah.
What was just said was very interesting. Food Not Bombs not only serves food, vegan food, to people without discrimination, without requirements for ID, without requirements for residency. We had Michael Schmidt on the station, I guess it was, on Sunday morning, talking about how, you know, he favors support service for the homeless only, but mostly for those who are residents. And there's this series of sort of the claim that somehow you can save money by cutting off food to people who aren't residents is thinly disguised. It's either misguided economy, or it is a thinly disguised bigotry. I'm not sure which. Maybe it's both. Because I don't think Schmidt is a bigot. I think he is a person who clearly has stood up for the right of homeless people to sleep, not everywhere and anywhere, but somewhere. And he was, you know, the CEO for the Chamber of Commerce at one time. And he's still respectable figure in the community. Anyway, more from this Food Not Bombs scene where we just heard from Abby, who is a longtime worker She's gotten into this relatively recently, but she's been very strong and determined and putting a lot of time and commitment, along with Keith McHenry, who has been here pretty regularly in the last few Food Not Bombs meals. He's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs. He was actually sitting at the literature table, and that was my point. I didn't quite reach it a moment ago, that Food Not Bombs not only serves food, it has a table which encourages people to understand why they're serving food. It is an attempt to educate the community that bombs, not food, are the priority. And that's the problem, that food is going to waste, food is not being distributed, 40%, money.
40% of food goes to waste, according to the stats I saw.
Right, and so that's what Food Not Bombs does. It goes around and tries to get food that otherwise would go to waste and prepare it in tasty ways. And also, it does not rely on government aid, government grants, non-profit grants and so forth and things of that sort. It relies on its own workers and local businesses and groceries that give away food that they can't use. And that's cooked up in Food Not Bombs kitchens. And by the way, they're still looking for cooks in the kitchens on Saturday and Sunday. If you're interested in that information, you can go to look for Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs online. You'll find them. Or give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We aren't officially a part of Food Not Bombs, but I will be able to look up their number and give it to you.
Furthermore, it's a community event, so it's an excuse for people to get together and say hello to each other.
Big time, yeah. You know? Share news and maybe even find some kind of ultimate solidarity, though that's always a problem for folks outside. There's a tendency to be apprehensive, protective, and also you're dealing with a wide variety of different kinds of folks, some of whom are weirder than others, and some of you got to keep your eye on your own property and that sort of thing. Let's hear some more.
There's a movement to change, to make awareness of how most of our tax dollars is going to military and being taken away from social services like education, health, and food. And we're trying to show there's a surplus of food. Everyone can get fed. And anyway, that's about it.
That sounds right. I mean, that's... Thank you. Yes. Go ahead.
Here it
is. Talking with
Red Wilson.
Go ahead, Red.
Not Bomb.
Yes.
Sharing the work is amazing. Sharing the work in Food Not Bombs, it all, it's like, bottom lining a whole meal is easy because we share it.
And how long have you been Food Not Bombing it up? As you get some nice big scoop of white rice. Oh, you're taking the colored rice. It's a racial thing with you.
Thank you.
How long have you been working here?
Maybe a little bit more. Thank you. I've been with Food Not Bombs Fresno for about a year, and then Santa Cruz about 4 months or so.
Has it changed much in the last 4 months?
I don't know, actually. Has it changed much? I think it's a dynamic thing. It's always changing.
You miss Fresno, the wide open spaces.
Yeah, I mean, Fresno Food Not Bombs is really interesting, too, because it's not as intergenerational. It's operated out of a place called the Info Shop downtown.
Anarchist Dogs.
Right, that's them. And, mostly like people from teens to through the 30s. And so that's pretty cool about Food Not Bombs Santa Cruz. Feels very intergenerational, which I appreciate the diversity of that. But yeah, it's a different experience.
Do you want grapes?
No, thank you.
No? Do you want any dessert or bread?
I'll take an apple.
We've been talking with
Red Wilson.
Thanks, Red.
Yeah.
The backpack with the sign, hungry, happy, hip. Excuse me, do you have a permit for this advertising table, McHenry?
No, of course not. But we did explain there was the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
No, that's a thing of the past.
So we came, he was pretty aggressive.
And Keith McHenry, of course, who was sitting at the table by the door of the post office. Admittedly, the table was closer to the public as they came in and out, but it certainly didn't block the way. And there's a huge amount of space along in front of the post office. It's a big building. And the idea that it couldn't in any way be constricting business was laughable, as well as the fact that as you just heard, Keith said that the postal official that insisted they move, which he refused to do, was advertising. And he said, no, we're not advertising. This is free speech. This is First Amendment activity. We're on federal property. Here, have a flyer, that sort of thing.
I had not run into the young man myself before. So I told him I was just calling my lawyer. And that we had won some
case. You have a lawyer?
Yeah, of course I got lawyers.
Oh, I have no idea. It's so sparse around Santa Cruz, I'll tell you. Unless, of course, there's like money to be made.
I get lawyers, and people want to be lawyers. There's no money in it, but...
You know a local lawyer is willing to defend food not bombs?
No, I'm just kind of having to talk to Jeff White, my attorney in D.C.
I see.
Yeah.
But he doesn't license to practice in California, is he?
Probably not.
Oh, there you are.
In the federal, I don't know, I could probably do federal case here.
Oh, this is federal right. You're on federal property. This could be an act of terrorism, which is punishable under the Federal Terrorism Act, or whatever they call it.
Right. Thank you, ma'am.
Yes.
I think you could be executed.
New legal thrills await you.
Right. Yeah, we'd be executed for handing out flyers about peace and social justice, which are being misinterpreted as advertising.
You don't want to throw a few Molotov cocktails into the post office? Let me help you with that.
Absolutely not.
Okay,
absolutely
I see.
Okay. It never happened. So,
how long ago did this individual show up? What did he...
About 10 minutes ago, and he came out of here very angry. He said, well, you can have the food, but you can't have the advertisements. And I go, it's First Amendment. I'm sure we can.
At which point he said...
No, you can't. You must leave right now. I said, well, we're calling our attorneys right now. You can call the... And Abby said, why don't you call the police? You don't like it.
And he said...
And he's like, and then he left.
The man's trying to stand up for the rights of the postal office. Postage office.
I do spend a lot of money here, so hopefully that'll work.
You still
work.
Use the postal system? You don't use email?
I can't email.
How can you talk to the NSA if you don't use emails? I want to know.
I talk to them too.
Ah, okay. Well, as long as you talk to everyone, that's appropriate.
Yeah.
I see you have no local flyers on your table except the one Santa Cruz advertisement for Food Not Bombs. Yes, but nothing about local political issues, Mr. McHenry.
Yeah, and then that one there.
What are you pointing to?
Well, the Romero Institute's flyer.
Romero Institute.
Yeah, about and we have stuff here on making Santa Cruz a NDAA free zone.
How about a homeless-phobia free zone?
NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act, which essentially allows the president to characterize anyone as a terrorist, even for donating money to a charity, which is later defined as a terrorist group. And that means you can be charged, though not told what you're charged with, or at least held without charges, detained indefinitely, and even presumably, as al-Awlaki was, murdered by presidential order. If you're on the wrong list. But remember, none of you will be, so let's not worry about that.
We can do that. You got a flyer on that?
I did, but Abby said there wasn't enough room for it on the table.
No, you can bring it. Obviously, there's plenty of room here now.
And, of course, what I was kind of ribbing Keith about, and Abby, too. Abby and Keith are kind of the king and queen pins of the Food Not Bombs movement, though it's supposedly non-hierarchical, and may well be. I haven't been to their meetings. Is that they don't have local flyers on the table about local issues. I tried to put a few Huff flyers on. They were kind of removed for lack of space. But I think actually that if I push it, they'll actually allow me to do a little more huffing and puffing on the table. That's often the case. You have to sort of, even to a group that's as, I think, commendable as Food Not Bombs, you have to deal with sort of an internal organization that sometimes is... there's a lot of drag to it, and also I'm making Santa Cruz an NDAA free zone, which is fine and good, and that means that we will not follow the orders if the government says, you know, that you assist us in locating Dr. O'Grady as a terrorist suspect to be held until such time. In effect, I don't think local governments have much independence in that regard. But, I mean, I think it's not a bad thing to do. But when the local ACLU spends its time working on those kinds of issues, and I'm not sure that they're even considering this issue. They probably are. Instead of the real, massive, endless, intense oppression that homeless people face in this community, or the, you know, the cutbacks in public space that the entire community faces, which in the attempt to extend the dragnet over homeless people, because they have to do so under the pretense of doing it for everybody, not just for homeless people, then I get concerned that the ACLU is a bunch of middle-class liberals chattering away in their rooms and, you know, avoiding real issues because they are they're afraid of the pressure groups on the right, or they're influenced by the politicians like Mike Rotkin, who are still on the board, who actually instituted the anti-homeless policies at the city council.
So we can take stuff like that.
Well, I didn't bother to bring it this week because I was discouraged last week.
Oh, no.
You know how it is. Yeah. Had I known that there would be a postal inspector waiting to seize my flyers, I would, of course, brought a whole bunch so they could be educated.
Right, right. Yes.
Earth Day in San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
And then the Occupy Forum Fukushima talk.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool.
When is Earth Day? Yeah, put them like, yeah, just wherever.
So you are putting local flyers there.
Yeah.
Is this some sort of privileged colleague of yours?
Yeah.
So, George, you want to tell us what this is about for tomorrow's radio show?
Of course, this was at the end of March, so I think the Fukushima rally, insofar as it was, well, let's hear what George has to say. I think we're probably a little out of date here.
Well, Earth Day is on the 19th, and it's a worldwide event.
April 19th.
Yeah, April 19th. It's a worldwide event, and in San Francisco there will be the corporate version, sponsored by Wells Fargo and other corporations, and there will be the alternative version, which will be down in the Bay.
Hiroshima survivors.
Well, Hiroshima is Occupy Forum. That's tomorrow night.
Oh, so when is that going to be?
And
what time?
So,
what time tomorrow night?
Okay, it's 6 p.m. at Global Exchange, which is 16th and Mission in San Francisco.
Charming. What, are you going to give us a ride up there, are you, Mr. San Francisco man?
You're forming the carpool.
Wow. You should have told me earlier.
Actually, I'm flying to Arizona on Tuesday, so I really can't go up.
Sorry, you can't stop and talk now. I understand. Yeah, but you're a busy man.
So that's Occupy Forum Monday, 7 p.m. San Francisco. And then on the 26th, Saturday the 19th of April, Worldwide Earth Day. And in San Francisco, there will be the corporate version, and then there will be the alternative version, which will be a good.
But when are we doing the panhandle in for Bob Lee and Wells Fargo? I understand Bob has got to pay back Wells Fargo. I think he already did pay back his debt to Wells Fargo, but he's our DA. We want to support him, don't we?
And this references the Santa Cruz 11 case, which is going to have a sort of get-together tomorrow for those who want to be supportive. Come to the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific at 7 o'clock. It's a kind of a get-together to thank all Santa Cruz 11 supporters. It's a potluck, so bring your own food. But that's at 703 Pacific Sub Rosa, a little cafe that's about a block from the Saturn. It's one street toward the beach on Pacific Avenue. Yeah, just off Laurel. It's one of those tree streets. I remember it's Sycamore or Cedar or Shamrock. I don't know. Not sure the name of it. In any case, 703 Pacific is the address. And D.A. Bob Lee is a guy who has spent hundreds of thousands, if you add it all up, in prosecuting the Occupy movement through the Santa Cruz 11. Even though the Occupy movement, many people, you know, disassociate themselves from the occupation of the vacant Wells Fargo leased bank building property way back in December of 2011. There's still this huge felony case going on against four of the Santa Cruz 11. And Bob Lee was suggesting that if only the Santa Cruz 11 agreed to pay, I don't know, a bribe of $23,000 to Wells Fargo as restitution for all the damages that none of them did in the building, but they're going to be tried for it anyway under the aiding and abetting theory. If they were there, they aided and abetted if they engaged in any illegal activity. And being in a building in a occupation when you're asked to leave is a trespass, hence it's illegal, hence you're theoretically, if they want to push this crazy law, responsible for felony vandalism, which somebody else committed in there. And it's, again, it's always seemed peculiar to me that the police never actually picked up the people who were the felony vandals, because they did a pretty close observation of the building. They had cameras on it a lot of the time. It's hard to believe they didn't have somebody inside the building, too. But in any case, Bob Lee would suggest, I was suggesting a panhandle in for Bob Lee, and I think that's still a good idea. And perhaps I'll be leading that outside his office to encourage people to pennies for Bob. And actually, it's a panhandle, and it's not about the restitution fee of $23,000 for Wells Fargo. Rather, he is he's refusing to pay a $500 fine against his office because of the misconduct of his main attorney, who was district attorney, assistant district attorney, who was prosecuting the Santa Cruz 11, Rebecca Young, who was actually sanctioned in an unprecedented move by Judge Paul Burdick for repeatedly refusing to or promising to provide police records, police videos to the defense and not doing so time and time again, and dragging people back to court again and again and again as we tried to get this information. When we finally got it, and there finally was a preliminary hearing, seven of us at various times were dismissed from the case, leaving only four, and the only evidence against them is that they were, the claim that there is probable cause to believe they were in the building, along with hundreds of others, after a warning was given. It's complete, huge waste of public money, and Bob, and also shows the not just the incompetence, but the political nature of this whole thing, which Bob Lee, I guess, is eager to roll past with a big smile and a firm handshake and a clap on the back, which is what he did to me when he saw me in city council about a month ago. In the days when I was still recording city council and hadn't yet been arrested for tape recording there. Now let's hear some more from Food Not Bombs, March 29th.
No, yes. The silence on that issue?
I
leave you speechless.
My personal issue is that Wells Fargo has its own lawyers, and if they want the $18,000 from the defendants, they can use their own lawyers instead of using public lawyers. I think it's reprehensible that the DA is wasting corporate money. Wells Fargo has been sued by the District Attorney of California and the Securities Exchange Commission for their foreclosure nonsense. And this DA, the Attorney General of California, got a multi-billion-dollar settlement from Wells Fargo. Our DA here is trying to get money for Wells Fargo when they should be getting money from Wells Fargo for the people.
To loot locally rather than federally. What is your problem with that?
Bob Lee should be defending the people being ripped off by Wells Fargo mortgage and RoboSign instead of...
And, of course, we're talking about the Santa Cruz 11, the Final Four, who actually had a hearing this last week. Did you get to that hearing by any chance?
No, I was busy doing corporate nonsense in San Jose.
Indeed, and questionable behavior on your part. Again, we've been talking with...
George.
Thank you, George.
And there'll be another status hearing for the Santa Cruz 11 coming up on March 7th. I believe it's at 8:15 a.m. in Department 6. That will probably be another, we'll be seeing you down the road 3 months, because now Bob Lee is trying to disqualify Judge Paul Burdick, who is not the best judge in the world, but he's noticed that the government's case seems to be pretty thin because he's been dismissing cases, individuals, myself included, major criminals like myself. This does not please Bob Lee, particularly when, I guess, Burdick reportedly said that he was kind of really tired of the case, and he told a jury in a murder case, cases like murder cases have been postponed because of the Santa Cruz 11. Real crimes are not being tried because of the political determination of Bob Lee and others to proceed to make this an object lesson and maybe prevent a second Occupy movement. I don't know. Anyway, that's coming up on March 7th at 8:30, May 7th, and it'll be in Department 6. And I'll be announcing it again as we get closer to that date.
George, actually, Michael, you were saying there is a Wells Fargo foreclosure manual, so we can learn how to be just like Wells Fargo and do some fancy foreclosing.
How to forge documents for their staff, for their lawyers and their staff. That's what the manual
improve,
is.
Improve documents. Don't use the word forge. It's such a harsh word.
No, I'm afraid I have to say what it is.
Missing endorsements. So it's for mortgages missing endorsements. So
yeah.
The lawyers are instructed on how to create endorsements.
Well, creation is a good thing. I mean, the Lord created the world.
Forgery and illegal, but apparently Wells Fargo statement as to, well, that was the first edition of their foreclosure manual, and they've updated it since.
How nice.
So they're not showing it to anyone.
So, that's very interesting. Thank you very much. We've been talking with
Michael O'Grady.
And, of course, George here. So yeah. Thank you both.
Any you want to add to that, Michael, or did you pretty much say it there?
I don't know. I think he said it. Endorsement documents. I'm not quite sure what they are, but it seems like if there's a MERS electronic mortgage, that it gets split into thousands of owners, and nobody can really claim I own the mortgage. And so that's where a lot of people have gotten off their payments in court, and they I know some people who live in a mortgage-free house after going to court.
Are you suggesting that this Mel Wells Fargo is attempting to avoid this by creating fictitious owners?
Exactly.
This is one of our fine banks. How can you suggest such a thing?
Yeah, well, it goes to show you what kind of tugs are in those banks. And what they do, what they get up to.
These are our corporate masters that you're criticizing.
I know, but people have to see the reality, that they change their view, they have to drop this conventional stuff. There are thugs in these banks operating, and they don't go to jail. They somehow get by.
They go to Jamaica, probably for vacations. Yeah. Let's hear some more from, again, Food Not Bombs, March 29th.
So we're talking with that questionable criminal dishwasher. What's your name, Adam?
She shall remain unnamed.
And the unnamed woman. I see you have three different buckets. One says, the other says, and the other says, rinse third. Now, what does this all mean? How do you do this?
What this means is that people can be liberated in the simple act of doing their own dishes.
Well, how come you're washing the dishes and they're not?
Yeah, they weren't catching on. So
no,
we're going to spread
washing them, but then some. You know, you wash them if you can, and if you can't, that's okay. Because it's all happening here. We're not throwing away as much stuff anymore, so it's really good.
There must be order!
Order?
Well,
no.
No.
We'll find a natural order here, and, you know, yeah, just yell smoothies at people, and yeah.
You are, in fact, dispensing smoothies here?
Yeah, they're not from Jamba Juice.
Isn't some sort of toilet facility that is actually smoothies?
Well, now that you've said that, it does look like that.
Yeah, but it smells
but
good.
It's very fruity. Yeah, do you want a cup?
No, but I will take a step back as I move along.
All right, on. Okay.
We've been listening to
Robert Norris.
Yes. Is that my name? Thank you very much.
And the point is that Food Not Bombs also not only is serving food, but it's washing its dishes as it serves food and is encouraging people to wash their own dishes if they want. And it's it has its own trash disposal. It's all sort of an operation that's pretty neat, put together, serves people for an hour and a half, again, on Saturdays and Sundays, right outside the main post office, usually on the sidewalk at 4 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Let's hear a little more from this interview, and then we'll be turning to the interviews we did today, you and I and others, Michael, at the pedestrian bridge near Highway 1, near the San Lorenzo River levee.
The A-Clue man. What's your name, sir?
Daniel.
And Daniel, you are a member of the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union the group that defends our civil liberties here in Santa Cruz.
Yes, we are that group.
And you recently had a Monday meeting this week.
Yeah, we had a meeting.
Was the public invited to the meeting?
We did have members of the public at the meeting.
For how long were they?
They stayed for a good 20 minutes.
You mean in the out of a two-hour meeting?
Out of a two-hour meeting, but we discussed things that they had.
Did you ask them to leave at some point?
I don't recall anyone asking that.
Somebody there, I mean, they got bored and left?
I believe so, yes. It gets very boring after a couple, half an hour.
Who chaired this meeting?
Who chaired it? It was Peter.
So Peter did not tell people to leave when they...
I believe it was Peter. I'm not quite.
He didn't say to the public members, you have to be gone when the public comment period...
I wasn't aware of any...
Were you dozing off, perhaps?
I might have been doodling a little bit.
And now, you were going to bring up a resolution to...
And the reason I make this point with the local ACLU, which meets every month, I think it's the last Monday of every month, at 5:30? No, it's 7 at the Loudon Nelson Center, in case you want to... waste your time there with that particular group. I waste time talking about it, so why shouldn't you waste time going there? Who knows? Gelblum, I think his name is Peter, the chair of the ACLU, has reversed a policy whereby the meetings seemed to be open, and some of us came and sat down and listened to the whole meeting and made comments, even joined in the discussion on some of the issues. He insisted when I brought homeless people to raise the issue that the ACLU was not dealing with homeless issues. He, first of all, tried to exclude us until the public comment period came, which would be at the end of the meeting, including a bunch of other people who had come to the meeting to listen to a presentation on immigration. This was, I don't know, a few months back. And then he regularly did that thereafter. And he and others rejected a proposal by Steve Plaich, who went along with this exclusion stuff when it was happening until he could provide a formal resolution, which was voted down to open up the meeting. Again, I find this unfortunate. I think the way to deal with exclusion meetings that exclude you is just to sit in them and then say proceed. That's what I did at the city council. Of course, they had me arrested, so I suppose there's a drawback there. But the idea that the ACLU would arrest people who are simply trying to participate in the meeting by simply being there quietly is a real casts a lot of doubt on the notion on their support for such things as the First Amendment regarding the government and so forth. And of course, Mike Rutkin, who is the vice chair and who's a big fan of closed meetings when he wants them closed, would tell you that they're not a government agency; they're a private agency. They can do whatever they want, yada yada yada. And it's certainly true they can. But an agency that supposedly supports civil liberties doing such things makes one wonder about their consistency on these issues. Let's hear some more from Danny, who is a Food Not Bombs worker, and I think a genuinely concerned with homeless civil rights. The problem is that these ACLU-type groups eat people up. They don't. They persuade people that you have to follow their rules, and when you follow their rules, you don't get any resolutions on these issues. You don't get any action, and instead you sit around waiting and going into committees and essentially kowtowing to what the main folks are proposing, and the institutional structure as it usually goes. Let's hear some more of my inquiring, interrogating poor Danny, who is a good man, but he's now part of the ACLU board of directors, and so fair game.
The sleeping van, how did that go?
Well, I wasn't actually able to get a resolution onto the agenda, but
Why not?
Well, it was my fault. I didn't notify them early enough, but
I tell you, you had to notify them a week in advance.
Well, it will be on the meeting agenda notes for next.
Notice he did not answer me. Yes, I did tell him. Yes, he said he was going to do it. No, he didn't. And does this mean Danny is a bad guy? No, he means he's ACLU influenced, and it means, I don't know what it means really, but what it does mean is that there was no resolution put forward around it. Such a simple thing as the ACLU opposes the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. The fact that cannot come out of the ACLU without elaborate, endless effort is says more than I could say.
Now, are you actually going to be asking if they, set up a committee to research it for 5 years, or are you actually going to ask for a simple, we oppose the sleeping ban resolution?
We're going to discuss it and come up with a resolution during that meeting.
Really? I suggest you bring it along and ask that they endorse it rather than wait for them to come up with it. They will send it to a committee. I'm almost positive. That's what they've done on every other occasion. But this could be a change. This could be a whole new revolutionary...
Well, we can actually have some people working on that issue specifically.
That's what they've been saying for years. They're all working on it very hard.
Well,
and Jay is working very hard on other issues that I haven't heard much about in the last month and a half.
Well, are you referring to the license plate readers?
No, I'm not referring to that. That's an issue of license plate surveillance, police surveillance software for making sure that your license plate is well protected. I guess what that is. They're going to make sure wherever you go, they know where you are.
And they can track and...
make sure that you are under the eye of the authority.
And also they can tell whether your insurance and taxes are paid up to
date. As they should.
So of course. That's money for them.
Yeah, money is good. And we know our government to be well supplied with bucks for giving away so much to the banks as it is. But in any case, the issue is whether, you know, the downtown ordinances, these performers be gone stuff, the criminalization of people in parking lots that are paid for with taxpayer money, issues that have been around the city for a decade or more, that the ACLU is well aware of and actually took a small position on part of that issue. I think they expressed some concerns about whether parking lots should be turned into crime scenes if you're sitting there reading a book, which
right.
apparently is now the case. It's illegal to sit or stand or loiter or hang out in a parking lot unless you're parking or retrieving your own vehicle or possibly somebody else's vehicle or walking directly through. But my point is that I know the two of your activists, Jay and Mithril, at least Jay, was working on this issue or told me he was working on this issue. Did he have a report at this meeting on that?
The issue of...
Any local civil liberties issues having to do with poor people, homeless people, or public spaces.
Right. Well, I think there was a report on the street ordinances for public performance.
All right, that could have been. That's rather specialized, but still important because there are some, though.
And then, like I said, I brought up the issues of the sleeping ban and also the police confiscating property.
What did they say when you brought that up?
They were very supportive, actually. They
told you to come back next month, right? Come back in a month and we'll talk about it.
There wasn't any official resolution that I put on. I just had it brought up as a small addendum to an existing agenda item.
I mean, it's not that important after all. Compared to license surveillance, who cares if people lose their property and can't sleep at night, right?
No, that's not the reaction that we got, but
that's what you came there with the idea, because otherwise you would have had a resolution as suggested by a very, very fine individual whose name Robert Nurse North. Anyway, this guy suggested this resolution to you, and you apparently didn't bring it up in quite that way.
Well, it's being brought up for the next meeting.
For the next meeting, next month. Will you be indemnifying everybody who gets sleeping tickets for the next month because of your failure, I understand, to bring up that issue? You feel a little bit under the gun here. I've buffered him into silence. Did you want to say something?
No, I'm good.
Some comments, perhaps?
No comment.
No, okay. So, what else happened at the meeting that we should know about?
We'll hear more about the ACLU meeting, but on the line with us is Pick'em-Off Pat Colby. How you doing, Pat?
Pretty good.
And so Pat, you've been doing all kinds of work around civil rights for the homeless, probably more than the ACLU has done in 20 years in Santa
Cruz.
And you particularly, you showed up not at 8 o'clock, as you promised, but at 8:15. I showed up there, too, at the levee today, down near the pedestrian bridge, I guess, near, Ross's Dress for Less. And so you brought coffee, and I brought some forms. What happened there today? What was going on?
Well, what we were doing is we were actually making people, you know, feel good, giving them free coffee. We also had forms because what we want to do is collect data and document abuse and harassment and what they've been cited for, how they've been treated by people. And there was a great response to it. And one of the issues that came up, there's quite a few people since it was near that levee bridge that were talking about what was going on, the abuse and the harassment from the staff at the Homeless Service Center. So that was interesting.
You know, interestingly enough, I'm glad you mentioned that because Michael O'Grady, who's in the studio with me, say hello to Michael, Pat. Pat, say hello to Michael.
Oh, hi, Pat.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Michael.
There's a brief article by Jessica York in the, from the Sentinel, with a little picture of our darling, smiling Monica Martinez, who's the who has been the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. She is moving up from that position to be the Encompass Community Services CEO, is that right? Yes, she's the new CEO for a nonprofit counseling center, and so she's made her mark and now is moving on, having set up security gates, or I guess prepared for that, and ID cards, and no impact zones, and things of that sort.
No facilitating ADA clients.
I mean, no regard for the disability requirements of the federal government.
We can't afford to to make things for this, even though they get grants from the federal government, so they're required by law by accepting the funds.
Mm-hmm. So what did you hear today, or what was your thought?
Well, the thing I was calling about right now, somehow I lost. My Comcast internet is coming into my home, but my computer is no longer accepting it. And I spent 4 hours last night, late at night, trying to get it to do it. So I needed to look at something.
Back to the point, Pat. Back to the point. What did you find?
But I was looking on the internet of my friends, and there was something about Take Back did some kind of meeting or something where they were kind of demanding that the successful needle exchange program start marking the needles, and I wanted to know a little more about that. Did you know about that?
Well, you know, actually, I don't have a lot of information. I think it has to do with the cost of that. And there is some discussion about it. I can't really informatively discuss it at this point because I don't have the information. Though our old sometimes he sways this way, sometimes he sways that. Steve Plaich guy, a political Plaich, who I call him, is...
a good name.
We might give him a call and see what his thoughts are.
Well, I did see what he wrote on his group. I call it CFAB, but it's Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, which turns into more bickering.
Citizens for a Plaichier
City
Council.
More like a bickering Santa Cruz. But... what he was saying, that in Japan they do it, and they found out that it was extremely costly. And considering a group that says there's already too much money, too much cost spent on social justice for homeless, I can't imagine that they would be behind something that would take more funds into social for the homeless. So I felt like their agenda is more about wiping out the needle program, which... in my opinion, would lead more needles, more dangerous, hazardous needles everywhere.
Well, Take Back Santa Cruz wants to show, I believe, or believes, and wants to document that the needle exchange program that is currently banned in the city but still operating at Emmeline Street results in discarded needles in the community, improperly discarded needles. And the point is that if you mark the needles coming from the Emmeline Street, you'll be able to tell if it's them or not, or if it's from the pharmacies or somewhere else. That's not really what we're talking about here, Pat, at the moment. We can talk more about it once I get some more education on it. But
I saw posted.
Well, I'm not interested. I mean, I am interested in that, but I guess what I was asking you about, and, you know, it was the issue of the work today on the levee. I mean, I guess that'll come out when we're talking in the tapes, because we did do a lot of recording and did a lot of interviewing. Have you updated actually the material we got on the levee? I mean, I know you were taking a lot of reports.
I haven't had a chance because, again, my computer suddenly is having problems.
Okay. Well, I wish you luck with that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to turn to the Geek Squad, so this is probably going to cost me a couple $100 to resolve this problem. I will never go on an unsecured Wi-Fi at Cabrillo College ever again. But, we got a lot of... There was a lot of people that reported that they were harassed, that they were cited, that they were harassed while being cited. that they were treated very badly.
Well, you mentioned harassment at the homeless lack of services center, as I call it. How many reports did you get of that?
I would say, just a fast guess, at least 5.
And how many reports did you take total in this survey?
What I'm thinking I'm looking at is 20. I'm just guessing it might be 18. But some people, especially the people from the homeless lack of services, I call it the helpless lack of services.
What was the nature of the kind of concerns people
had? They were
really
angry. They were writing a lot of details
about
it. They were giving us specific.
What was the nature of this? Have you looked at the reports to have the specific concerns of the homeless lack of services center that these 5 reports had? Or?
I haven't totally looked, but it sounded like there was a lot of harassment from the way the staff treated them. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of problems with not being able to get information about the waiting list, not being able to get confirmation that they're on the waiting list so that they could get their citations voided. That was some of the concern. I heard somebody had said that they got lice from the armory. So it was like, it was just a lot of, you know, kind of definitely fixable problems that shouldn't be still going on after all this time.
Well, you know, I got a letter here from Steve Conover, who is an older guy who's outside, and he and I have been kind of corresponding around the Homeless Lack of Services Center's apparent refusal to, it's not so much sign off his sleeping band citation. You can't really sign them off, but you could provide a letter to the court saying that he was on the waiting list or that the shelter was full. But apparently, according to him in his letter to me recently, that I'll read his letter actually when we finished our conversation, so he can we can be more detailed. Anything else you want to say, Pat, that came up?
What I'll say is I will start going through the reports and kind of collecting the stuff, and for your Sunday show I can do an update on that.
That would be great. That would be great. I'd like to
hear
that.
And I would love to hear the letter. Unfortunately, again, I have no internet, so
well, I'll tell you what.
No,
I'll tell you what. I'll read the letter while you're still on the air. Here we go.
Yeah, that's what I was basically asking.
So this is originally I got a letter from Steve, which he sent me a sort of a thing from change.org about a student in Paris, Texas, who got permission from his teacher to use the restroom, was profiled and followed by the school police officer, who interrogated him why he was using a bathroom closer to the classroom. He had to do number 2. And anyways, it's a long situation that he was assaulted and injured by both the guard, yes, it was, school police officer, and the principal.
Principal.
And anyway, it's an interesting story. So, but I mean, more relevant, that's in Paris, Texas, but we're talking about Santa Cruz. He said initially, and along with that story, Steve's told me that he could do nothing, re his 2 illegal camping citations, what he calls crimes against humanity, and heard that the gate coming to the homeless service center, the security gate around the requiring people to show ID coming in, or I'm not sure how they're going to monitor it one way or the other. All this stuff, he writes, is really for staff paychecks, not the homeless. They do all they can to get a paycheck, parking, and oh so much more. Just use the homeless as a profit item or line item. You know what I mean. And I then asked him specifically, when were these camping tickets? Was he on the waiting list? What help did he ask for, and what did he get? He writes back, he got 2 in March, and they said they could do nothing. The armory was not full, and he didn't sign up for the armory this year, but he was on the loft list, the Pauli loft list. And the details, which I guess people in the audience don't understand or might not follow unless they're regular listeners here, is that in order to stop lawsuits against the city for essentially torturing homeless people with repeated arrests by citing them for situations where making them go to court, to show a shelter shortage, which is obvious, which is unchanged, unchanging, and unlikely to change. The city attorney in 2010 put in a change in the law that said if you are on the waiting lists of the Pauley Loft or the River Street Mini Shelter, or if the armory is full, tickets shall automatically be dismissed short of court. And we've been trying to monitor this for years, sometimes successfully, sometimes less so. I finally sent a letter to the assistant city attorney who assured me that that was the case. You don't have to have the armory full and be on a waiting list. You just have to have one or the other. But according to Steve, he wrote back that he was not on the armory list, but he was on the loft list. And his most recent letter reads, he spoke with Chris Monty after being referred to him by my Project 180 case manager at Homeless Service Center. He had told his case manager that he received two of these sleeping citations, and could he help with getting them dismissed? He said no, and that I needed to see Chris Monty for such matters. So this Tuesday, last Tuesday, I went, he writes, and spoke with Chris Monty. He looked at the citation and said, I cannot help you. The armory was not full that night. Earlier in the month, I had filed out a loft application, but never heard anything about that, and Chris did not mention shelter or loft, just armory. So they are still, as of last Tuesday, making the mistaken interpretation, which I sent to Monica Martinez. Apparently she's too busy fluffing her hair for her new job as CEO of this new group, a non-profit. What's it called?
Will it be a legal non-profit this time?
This is a non-profit that I have no idea about that. It is another one. It's called Encompass. I don't know where that's. In any case, I don't want to be diverted from this letter. I'm going to go back to the letter. And that is, he stated that Monte is still misadvising people and refusing to give them to forward their names to the city attorney's office. So apparently the city attorney doesn't even know these people should have their tickets dismissed. So they're getting hassled. And I don't know whether it's because he's simply, dumb as a post, whether he's being advised he has to do this, whether he's, angry about something, whether he's simply doesn't understand, or whether this is, a response to an attempt to crack down as part of a sort of a off-to-the-side crackdown, which is violating the law, which was passed by the same city council that's been passing these other nasty laws. This actually was a good law. It had some, some relief for homeless people, mainly to relieve the city of liability, of course. He said he wants me to go in with him to stop by the district attorney's office, or actually it's the city attorney, which is not the district attorney. And he says he has to contest the citations 5 days before the due date, which is the 22nd of this month. And I'm going to work with him on that. So that's what he writes, and you got a chance to hear it here. I'm going to move on to the next caller, if there actually is a caller, and we'll... But Michael O'Grady has a comment. He's in the studio. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, it sounds... He said somebody filled out a form for the waiting list for the loft. So all he needs to do is get a copy of that form and bring it to the district attorney's office.
City attorney.
Yeah, city attorney, yeah.
Right. Although the district attorney is getting involved with his 100 chronic offenders program. It's all getting pretty dirty, pretty nasty, and pretty totalitarian with all these agencies being arrayed against poor people who are just trying to sleep at night. Anything else, Pat, you want to talk about?
I just want to make a final comment that from what I'm hearing and what other people have found, trying to get a copy of the fact that they're on the waiting list is almost as hard as getting a classified document from the government. So it's been really frustrating to prove that you're on the list, because they don't give you a copy that you're on the list. They could make up a new list and say you were never on it.
Right.
And they won't give you a receipt. And I think that they should get receipts.
Yeah, they do at times. At times they don't. And certainly there's no consistent policy giving a receipt. This is, I think, largely to be blamed to Monica Martinez, who I think should be... I don't know what this new organization.
Well, let's hope this new director.
I don't know what this new organization that she works with actually does. But I think that it might be nice to file over there and let them know just what kind of a mess she's made of the homeless lack of services center, at least in this regard. Go ahead.
And I just have one other comment. If this person isn't doing what is required of their job to send the document to get an auto, what if you say send it to the city attorney and then they'd automatically get released from that citation?
Right.
If they're not doing their job, then maybe we need to have them looked at as to why they're not doing their job, and if they're not doing their job, why should they still have a job?
They're being misadvised, I suspect, but I have no idea. Thanks for the call in, Pat. Hope to hear from you with a report on Sunday.
And I'll start looking at those reports.
Good. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a good night. Bye.
Bye-bye. So, call-in number is 427-3772. I think you had something you wanted to say, which I encourage you to do before I start playing some of these reports from today that we're going to hear some of the audio. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, well, in Palo Alto, they passed an ordinance last year that would punish people for living in a vehicle with as much as $1,000 fine or 6 months in jail. 6 months in jail. Can you imagine?
Yeah, the ordinance has been suspended pending a decision in Los Angeles and as well as strong activist activity in Palo Alto. We actually got a report from that from Aram James and Chuck Jagoda, who are local Palo Alto activists. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've met a number of people who were living in their van or the cars, a well-spoken lady, and she fell behind in her registration fee, they clamped the car and took it away, and there are several cases of that. And once they take the car and impound it, it jumps up several $100s. And those people are now living in the homeless shelter. Whereas before they had a measure of independence, sleeping in their van or the car. I think it doesn't sound correct to me that they should be able to steal their car like that.
To say the least. I agree.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little music, and we'll be back. You're tuned again to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, in the studio with Robert Norris. That's me and Michael O'Grady, a meditation and medical man, in case you want to combine those things. He does.
My daddy is an engineer, my brother drives a hack, my sister pulls in washing, the baby balls the jack, and it looks like never gonna cease my wandering.
I have been wandering early and late, New York City to the Golden Gate. And it looks like I'm never gonna cease my wandering. The snakes in the ocean, eels in the sea. Was the red-headed woman made a wreck of me.
Never gonna cease my wandering. Nobody knows you.
Oh, when you're down and out,
in your pocket, not one penny,
and your friends. George Washington Bridge.
It might as well.
And that's Nobody Loves You When You're Down and Out, and a couple of other songs as well, with Peter, Paul, and Mary, augmented by some other folks who were doing some stuff in their Lifelines album. You are still tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, and you can still call in 427-3772. In the studio with me is Michael O'Grady. We can turn to now. I'm going to turn to the some reports from this morning at the San Lorenzo River levee, or on the, I guess I'd say the north side of the levee. I'm not sure if you say east or the west, but it's the side of the levee that is sort of the downtown area, and Mike tells me it's the west side, where we showed up with tables and coffee and literature and reports to for people to fill out forms if they wanted to talk about harassment. And, of course, my trusty criminal audio recorder, or actually it's a tape recorder, and did some recording, and it's what you're going to hear now.
We are down here. It's April 9th, 2014, about 4:30. I'm talking with that man about the streets.
Actually, it's, sorry, this is from yesterday. And we're going to do a little of that first before we hit to April 10th. That's today. And hopefully we'll get where we need to go.
My name is Anonymous.
And Anonymous, you have a comment about the analarians, as you put them?
The reptilian, fecal analarians.
Fecal, or is it fake?
Yes.
Are they both fake and fecal, or
all of the above? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're referring to a city government.
I'm referring to those pathological individuals who are control freak maggots. A real human being wants to control themselves. These subhuman maggots want to control us.
I'm actually going to let myself go, having a lot of trouble with that. I controlled myself for too long. That was my problem. But let me ask you this. You know, we're talking, and I see you have an associate here, the infamous Steve Argue. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
He's not that infamous.
Well, in some quarters, he's served more time in prison than I have, or jail than I have.
This is an interview on Pacific Avenue after the Huff meeting, which happens every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa. And it was about, oh gosh, half a block from there when I ran into Steve Argue, who's an old-time, he's a young he's a communist activist. He believes in a revolutionary overthrow of the capitalist system, and good for him.
For sure. And also, he's a known newspaper vendor on the street.
That's classified. That's all classified.
Actually, these are all true facts, which I'll explain in the commentary later. But you two are...
Steve Argue was actually arrested for selling the Street Spirit newspaper without a license, and sent his case was seminal in getting the city attorney to grudgingly admit that they can't stop you from selling a street newspaper. They can't require a permit. They can't require you actually stay in the outside the forbidden zones, provided you aren't sitting at a table. If you're walking around with your newspaper, you can sell it wherever you want. Unfortunately, we don't have the same number of street spirit vendors that we used to, though the new issue of the Street Spirit, the April Street Spirit, is available at the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's the newspaper homeless people can sell, or poor people can sell. You don't have to be homeless, but, you know, nearly homeless. If you're interested, go to the Sub Rosa, get some papers, sell them for a buck a piece. And, it's more legal than panhandling, and it also spreads information. There's a story by Steve Plaich about needle exchange, the subject that Pat Colby was talking about earlier, which is in the paper. And it has been removed from the library shelves for the last 6 months, partially because of uncertain delivery, but also partially because it looks like prejudice or incompetence or confusion on the part of some of the librarians. I continued to bring it in there, and they continued not to put it on the shelves, even though they said they were going to. I recently got more reassurance that they would, and we'll see if that actually happens. Ask for the Street Spirit in your local main library. The main library, that's the only place that it's going at the moment. Or ask me if you see me. I'm the guy with all the bumper stickers on his car. My car is completely coated in bumper stickers. You'll be able to read it. You can also go online and read the Street Spirit. In any case, Steve Argue was actually arrested, jailed for and held over the weekend for selling Street Spirit. I immediately began doing exactly what he did in order to maintain the right of people to do that, and I was ignored. They were going after him. It was a personal attack on him and his very strong political activism. This was actually happening
16 years ago in 1988. Sorry, 98. And anyway, this is a conversation that I and he and a couple of others had on the street. Well, he and his companion and I.
Thank you. The seizure of the individual who's tape recording at city council, me, in other words. Is that correct, Steve?
Yes, it's an outrage.
Are you outraged, or are you just sort of tired of hearing about that sort of thing?
No, it's an outrage. I'm serious. When I say outrage, I mean outrage.
You look sleepy, but you're just stoned. Is that the deal?
No, I'm not stoned.
But you are outraged.
I am outraged. Yes.
And you, sir,
it is commonplace. It seems like for this government to carry out injustices. I guess that might be part of my boredom with it, but it's like
another instance.
I'm not actually bored with it. I'm outraged. I actually am outraged.
Maybe you're just tired of it.
I'm sick and tired of it. I'm pissed off about it.
Good. I'm glad somebody of the many in Santa Cruz who might respond and probably won't, at least one does. Actually, there are a few who do.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who are outraged.
Any reports from the streets that you guys were just walking up the block here? We're in front of, I don't know, People Power, downtown Santa Cruz. Anything you've noticed in the last week or two you want to pass on?
One thing is a lot of people are getting evicted due to these new laws. This new law they have about granny units.
Inspection stuff?
Right, And that looks pretty bad. I don't know a lot of the details, but I'm hearing people talking about how it's hurting them.
And you, sir, any comments?
I concur.
Fair enough. That was pretty... All right, okay. We'll let that one go. Anything else, Steve?
The system needs to come down. I mean, it's not enough to just say that anti-homeless laws are terrible. And I mean, we need to nationalize the banks and make housing available to everybody. And capitalism is just wrong.
And we've been talking with
Stephen Argue
and
Captain Beefheart.
Thank you, Captain. So I am here at a new, should we call it a head shop? What would you call this?
We've been calling it a lifestyle store because we have the clothing and then we have the smoking accessories. So
no booze and no heroin?
No heroin.
What kind of a dump is this? So this is a pretty large shop. It used to be Jabberwocky.
It was Jabberwock for a very short period of time, and before that it was Idle Hands for quite a few years.
And that's right across the street from, the Afghan restaurant?
It's kind of in between the Afghan restaurant and Taco Bell, across the street.
On Pacific Avenue.
On Pacific Avenue.
And it looks like half the store's got, I don't know, clothes made by slave labor in Thailand, and the other side has a lot of pipes.
A lot of pipes. And most of our stuff's actually not slave labor, because we actually are very concerned with that sort of thing.
So where does it come from, most of it?
We get, one guy reworks vintage clothes, cloth, and he's based out of Canada, and some of it is China made, but a lot of it is printed in, we have mostly American made t-shirts, so American Apparel. And
what's your price range here?
On the price range, the t-shirts are generally 20-ish, some are a little bit more expensive if they're licensed.
Actually, it's relatively cheap.
Yeah, that's what we try to get, the cheap stuff, or cheaper, not... It's still quality.
How long have you been here?
We've been here a little over 3 months.
And how's the business?
So far, so good. This week has been a little slow, but so far we've actually been doing better than I anticipated, considering we opened at a really horrible time of the year, right basically at Christmas, and then so it's dead right past that forever. But we've been doing pretty well.
Any police officers trooping in trying to sniff you out to see if there are minors purchasing smoking apparel?
No, we had, the only thing we had is we actually got broken into. It was our first month in, and the police weren't here for that because we got $8,000 worth of stuff stolen. So, but they've been pretty friendly all in all. We're having to deal with vagrants a lot, but they're doing, random things in the store, or in front of the store, such as, defecating and urinating in front of our store lot. But
you have a public bathroom perhaps in the back?
not public in that sense.
Indeed. Well, you know, there is, of course, there is a new 24-hour bathroom, the only one in Santa Cruz, except for the one at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, a block over. So that you might want to have a sign that says, please take a dump a block over.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea, actually. There's many signs I actually want to put in front of the store.
What would one of those be?
Well, one of them would be the don't urinate, and the other one would probably be, what, I don't know, what else is going on here? Like that we would put a sign for. There's a lot. Don't take a razor blade to our window. Don't, what else? Don't, yeah, spray paint in front of our windows. Don't.
Has Take Back Santa Cruz tried to shut you down yet?
No, they have not.
Have you had any flack from any conservative community groups?
No, not at all, actually.
And what you were telling me before you worked at Pipeline, which is, of course, almost a block and a half from here across the street, something like that?
It's, yeah, about that. It's down maybe a block.
And it's still open?
It's still open, yeah.
What, do you think that the store, the city can actually, there's business enough for another store?
I'm hoping so. I mean, our business, I got a lot of regulars so far. So, you know, a lot of people that I've been, you know, lived in this community for 12 years. So I know a lot of people, and they've all come in, most of them come in to support us. So I really appreciate that.
And you make enough to pay the rent?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
What is the rent here?
I don't know if that would be something I would the
we
landlord would want me to say.
Let me put it this way. Is it exorbitant?
It's actually because we looked on a bunch of different open spaces on Pacific Avenue, and sadly, north of Cathcart won't let you sell tobacco accessories, but so
what you build this as tobacco accessories?
That's what
interesting looking water pipes for tobacco accessories. I suppose in certain Turkish cities.
No, it's a big thing over there. So no, it's all tobacco accessories, and the rent here is actually, if we're going back on the rent thing, it's actually pretty cheap for Pacific Avenue. It's, you know, that's relative because Pacific Avenue is pretty expensive.
What was the range of rents that you found on Pacific Avenue as you sought a store?
Well, let's just say this one is 2,400 square feet, and we looked at one that was 1,200 square feet, north, a little more north up, and it was almost twice as much as this one is, so I think the further north you go, the more expensive it's going to be. So,
the only two you looked at were those two?
No, we looked at a few other ones.
Well,
but
give me an example of the average rent on Pacific Avenue as a cost per square foot.
Per square foot, it's like between $10 a square foot to, like, I think some of them we were looking at were like, well, actually, there's ones that are 20, and there's some that are like, I mean, I think it was like $40 a square foot in one of the buildings, but that was, and we could not afford to pay that, like, even close.
Special plush rugs, or?
It's actually some of those ones that are empty, that have been empty up north for quite a while. But, so
they're still hoping, or they're just getting tax benefits?
Yeah, or something. I don't know how they're, what
their deals in the back, perhaps.
Hopefully. I don't know. Somehow they're going to be paying their rent there, paying their mortgage. I don't know. But they probably have so much money they don't need.
So I don't see the word marijuana appearing anywhere in the store. Is that intentional?
No, we're trying to make the place classy, and like, not that that's not classy, but we're not posting a bunch of random signs anywhere.
Jabberwocky hippie types coming in and breaking holes in the wall. Is that what you're saying?
That would be nice. We'd like to keep the store as nice as possible, even though.
What's your claim that you said that when you moved in, the owner had told you there was a lot of damage, and you found yourself a lot of damage from the previous owner?
Yeah, we had to patch a lot of holes and a lot of half knocked down walls, and there was just random spray painted figures on the walls, and there was the whole building was probably, even just the walls were probably five different colors. So there was a lot of primer and a lot of paint.
Psychedelic person yourself?
Not too much, no. Not well. At least if it's going to be psychedelic, I want it to look nice. It just looks like some big of a 12-year-old spray paint can and let him go at it. So
you know, Labor Day costs are kind of high. What about the downtown ordinances? As a man who's been here for a decade, you know about the rules: sitting down on the sidewalk, sleeping at night. Are you now that you're a merchant, as well as previously being a manager over at Pipeline, are you more sympathetic to the merchants, get rid of them goddamn homeless type?
No, I mean, I don't. I mean, I actually worked with homeless people in my younger years. My mom was a lifelong social worker. So, I mean, I feel for the plight of the homeless. I mean, it is something that, like, I don't want them to damage my building. And it has become sort of a battle here with, you know, because I've been trying to be really nice to a lot of people, you know, urinating in front of my door and, you know, sleeping literally right in front of my door on the ground, super drunk. It is, you know, it is something where, you know, it's harder to be, you know, super sympathetic because it's like I try.
And, you know, I want to interrupt this interview to say that often I, because I'm interviewing someone, I don't interject, well, why don't you go to the city and demand they provide more public restrooms? Why don't you demand that they provide places where people can sleep? Because that's really the issue. Instead, you know, it becomes, oh, woe is me for these merchants, and therefore we need to have more rules to drive people away, criminalize people who are doing things that they have to do. So, yeah, I feel a little bit, I wasn't biting my tongue there. I just sort of was more focused on getting information about the running of the store here. And also, it seems, you know, obviously it's about marijuana. It's not about tobacco primarily. All kinds of fancy, you know, water pipes are not being used to smoke tobacco generally. And I kind of resent the fact that there's a certain, you know, what am I going to call it? Cowardice, discretion, censorship, whatever it is. And it's, I understand it's people are trying to run a business without being hassled by the police and trying to, you know, get the Texas Puritan, you know, stamp of approval. And Santa Cruz, that seems preposterous to me, and a real commentary on what's going on. I'm also hoping on Sunday to have a commentary from Measure K Commissioner, the new Measure K Commissioner, Coral Brune, who was appointed finally after a year by Micah Posner, the council member. And she went to the Measure K Commission meeting I guess it was Monday, and I spaced her out. I was going to go there with her. I just sort of to keep an eye on what's going on. She did have a companion who went as well. But it's a pretty hostile, I think, marijuana hostile group, although they claim they're not. Or at least some of them did in the past. But they're supposed to be monitoring the police and the police abuses around the right of people passed, initiative passed by the population to allow people to smoke marijuana. Or eat marijuana or use marijuana in private between consenting adults for any purposes, not just medicinal ones. Anyway, so here's some more from the new head shop, as I would call it, though I'm sure they don't call themselves that, tobacco water pipe shop, how's that? And clothing, fashionable clothing, on Pacific Avenue across from, just down from Taco Bell. On the other side of the street.
Be as nice as possible about it, but sometimes...
Hardening you think?
I wouldn't say that. Maybe a little bit, but I'm, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just, I try and be as nice as possible, but sometimes, you know, they'll, you know, just start yelling at me, and it's just, if I, you know, if someone has to step over someone to get in my store, it's something that, you know, it's, I got to pay the rent, so, yeah, you know, it's goes both ways.
Any problems in the last week?
And this is something that you and I, Michael, have had a disagreement about, too. In earlier shows, you know, you talked about anger management and, you know, dealing, you know, helping homeless people to correct their bad behaviors. When, in fact, they got no place to sleep and no place to take a shit or very few, it becomes a matter of the anger that comes from not being treated as a human being. And to manage that anger, to me, is a form of an insult against one's homeless condition. Doctor, what would you say about that?
Well, actually, if you give, there's a certain percentage of people, and even if you give them a home and give them whatever they need physically, they're still going to be left with their mental imbalances. And
again, that's a deceptive term, because there's no evidence whatsoever that so-called mental conditions, crises, traumas, that some people call them psychoses or whatever, that happen in people have anything to do with a chemical imbalance. Are you talking about a spiritual imbalance?
No, I'm talking about a mental imbalance.
In the sense of, is that shorthand for they're acting weirdly and I don't quite understand what they're doing?
Yeah, okay. You could say acting weirdly, you could say... full of negativity. I mean, some of these people, they don't really know how to live properly in society. They will steal everything around them. They will curse. They have
so you're
everything
not...
they say is negative. So I'm saying a certain percentage of these people. I'm not saying what percentage.
No, you're not.
It could be 5% or
60%. Why are you even mentioning such a small percentage if that's what it is, when the main complaint comes from people who are expressing outrage about their condition and are a little touchy about being treated like bags of shit wherever they happen to go. I mean, that to me is a far more relevant concern than going along with the existing mythology that you're dealing with people with mental problems and alcohol addictions.
Well,
I think
that all these people should be treated in the best way you can possibly treat them. But I don't think, Robert, you would open your front door to your home and let some of these characters in. I'm talking about some.
But that's not the issue. No one's asking people to open their doors. It's just not arrest them on the streets. That's what I'm talking about, and that's what we're talking about in this interview.
Yeah, well I mean, I support your stand on unjust police and other authority figures imposing these unnecessary restrictions on these people, but nevertheless, there are a high percentage of mental problems that need to be dealt with now or dealt with later when they have been given homes. And
large percentage. Again, now you're changing your tune. What percentage are you talking about, doctor?
Well, there is a what percentage? If I was to be lenient, I could say 80%.
That's not a small percentage.
No.
That's a huge majority.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have to really disagree. You're jacketing people with the mental illness problem as some kind of explanation for justification for the abuses people are suffering by saying, "Oh, you wouldn't want them in your house." I mean, and they have to be treated and all this.
The percentage not in your house is not 80%. That's I'm talking now about a different thing. I'm talking about overall, of the 80%, a certain percentage of those have anger issues and by right needs.
Again, the problem is this phrase, anger issues. You know, some people are getting angry at the United States for bombing and killing their relatives. I mean, they have anger management problems over there. If they only understood that this was necessary as part of the terrorist war, they would, behave in a more reasonable fashion. This kind of talk. There's a war on the homeless in Santa Cruz, and to suggest that people have anger management issues because they're being warred against, I think, demeans them and also misdescribes what's going on. That's my concern.
Well, I suppose I could just give you an example. Where I'm staying right now in the loft, there's a person, person right close to me, and He can't, speak normally. He's effing and cursing and shouting and very negative in general. And what I'm really saying is some of these people have been through a lot of negative experiences, and they
80%, I believe you said.
Well, yeah, but
80%.
80% include people with mild problems as well in that 80%.
Is this your medical kind of thing?
This
medical background. Remind me never, ever to go to medical school. I really have a difference of opinion with you there.
Yeah.
In the studio with you is Michael O'Grady, and I want to invite a caller. I guess David Silva tried to call in a few minutes ago, and I want him to be able to call now. He wanted to kind of say something. Wasn't sure what he wanted to say. Perhaps your usual kind of pep talk he gives us. Did you say all you needed to say about this, Michael?
For the moment, yeah.
We can revisit the issue another time.
There is one organization that tries to help these people with emotional issues and mental issues.
I'm sure there are a number of them.
But it's not encouraged or pushed that much.
Yeah. Well, I have nothing wrong with people who being offered, services to assist with problems that they recognize. The notion that you want to deal with people involuntarily is, I think, a very serious issue, and as involves basic freedoms. There we go. We have a caller here. I think I recognize this guy. Let's see who it is. Hi there. You are on Free Radio. Hello. Turn down your radio or you will be confused is my suggestion. Turn down your radio or you will be confused.
Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead. Hello, Uncle Robert?
Yes. How are you doing there, David Silva?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I was really, really encouraged by how concise and clear Steve Argue was. You know, I've been a pacifist all my life, and a pretty serious pacifist. I've done a lot of fasts, and I take my pacifism serious. But the time for revolution is now. We can't wait. If there be violence, let us minimize it.
I see, a call to arms. Does this mean you pulled out your bazooka, David Silva?
I didn't pull out my bazooka, but boy, if some officer starts crossing the Constitution, well, he's going to find that my tongue can lash pretty well.
Indeed. Well, I think speaking up against injustice is something I do all the time, and
we
I encourage
to
others
now.
To do.
Everybody must come out now and stop this tide. We have to turn back the tide, people. Wake up.
Thank you, David. Anything else?
Thank you, Robert.
No problem. Let's see if I can play a little bit more of this tape. I want to apologize to those listeners who were misinformed by some radio host, I think his name is Norse, that they were going to actually hear interviews from the levee today, because I allowed myself to get lost in other things. And I'm pretty sure, I suppose I should be cautious about this, but we have a longer show on Sunday at 9:30, and I think it's pretty sure that we're going to be doing quite a thorough review, and hopefully with Pat Colby's stats on the reports we got as to how the things are going down on the levee for people. And we're also planning to repeat this episode, at least I'm hoping we will, because I think it was very successful. People really enjoyed it. They were very outgoing. And people need to form more links with each other in this way, at least to understand that they share common oppression here. That's really the issue. If people begin to understand that, then they can understand that other differences perhaps are not as significant, at least in terms of dealing with that issue. Let's hear some more from the day before, yesterday actually it was, on Pacific Avenue.
In the past week,
This is, again, more discussions with a merchant who's opened a new head shop right across from Taco Bell, kind of, a little bit down from Taco Bell.
Really had a guy in the past hour, actually, that was massively intoxicated, leaning over his bike right in front of our store, like right to the right of our door. So
leaning over, throwing up, or
no, he wasn't throwing up. He was just like literally hunched over. I don't know how he even was standing up, honestly, but he was just he wasn't throwing up, but still partially blocking my door.
He seemed unable to take care of himself.
Yeah, he seemed very unable to take care of himself.
What was your response?
The cops came anyway, so I didn't have to really have a response. So they just came over, and then he sort of weaved on his bike. I don't know why they let him go, because he almost got hit by a car right out of starting on his bike. But, yeah.
And again, the name of your store is?
Smoke and Mirrors.
That's right. And we've been talking with?
Nathan West.
Nathan, anything you want to add? Any thoughts? We don't allow commercial advertisements on this station. However, insofar as you're a store that has some community news value, and that's what I'm doing here, I am risking my own store, my own program time by doing this. So, but anyway, any thoughts?
No, I just like I wish to thank everyone who's come out to support us, and we are the we're the only locally owned store that sells the stuff, so I've...
Pipeline isn't locally owned?
No, it is not.
I think it's one up in Berkeley, yeah?
There's one in San Francisco. It's actually owned. It just switched ownership like a few years ago. He lives in South San Francisco, the owner there. So,
Are you sympathetic to legalizing marijuana? In other words, are you... that was an attempt this year, as you know, before it split into four different sections, or I guess failed to get... I guess the main George Soros-type people did not support financially this particular effort, so didn't go where it needed to go.
I think it has... There's both ways. I think as far as, big tobacco, would probably come in and start selling stuff if it was actually legalized. So, there's a lot of people's
welfare on it. So, and I know that's partially why it didn't pass too, because, you know, the people who are actually growing this stuff actually, you know, are going to lose their all their, you know, income basically, probably, if it is. So I'd say there's, you know, for an actual usage, I would say, you know, it's fine. But, you know, livelihoods are on the line too. So there's, it's a 50-50 thing. So
I gotta think of the poor prison guards. How would they have jobs without those 750,000 arrests a year?
I would definitely say decriminalizing it would be very good. But, you know, there's a whole, you know, other things involved. But, you know, I think putting people in prison for it is pretty ridiculous, honestly.
And cruel. Mm. And expensive. Again, we've been talking with
Nathan West.
Thanks, Nathan. Block up the street is Needful Things, a smoke shop. Across the street is, well, Tampico's, but a little bit further up is Pipeline. And looks like the whole area is being hate-ified, meaning hate-Ashbury type-ified, gentrified in a way. Although the Needful Things smoke shop seems to be a little more candid, has a number 425 Toke. And I heard tell from the guy inside that there was a, they're reluctant to even use the word, he's not even allowed to discuss marijuana. He mentions a vapor shop selling e-cigarettes has opened on Cedar, and one tried to open on Ocean, and they were rejected. The city refused to allow that. So there is a, I don't know, repressive wind, perhaps, blowing around these issues. Not that I'm a big fan of tobacco or vaporizing, or even marijuana smoking, but I'm an even bigger fan of ending marijuana prohibition. And it's possible that a little commercializing might help that. So I just talked to a man who perhaps remained anonymous, has been kicked out of Joe's Pizza, and he mentions that he's very upset. He said he didn't indicate it was for any particular reason, but he said it. He was a customer, regularly watched his games there. I have no more that I can offer at this time, but that's what it is.
Well, we're in front of Logos. It's about 4:45. Talking with
Ryan.
And Ryan, you have a stand here. My family wants to be warm and safe tonight. Please help. Here, struggling. Please help us stay warm tonight. Thank you. Anything helps. And you have a paper cup with a little money in it and a blue milk crate turned upside down. I presume you've been sitting on.
Yes.
A backpack, a water jug. Actually, two backpacks, taking up more than 12 square feet. Beware, beware. And what's the story?
Well, the other day we were we had a meeting with our CPS worker, and we were supposed to meet her down here, and she comes down here to meet us because this is where we usually are.
CPS being
yes. Uh-huh.
What was the reason? What was the reason for your meeting?
We were meeting. It was a regular meeting to follow up on a situation that we've been involved in. But that's not my issue.
Okay.
My issue is that even though we were supposed to meet her and we're coming to meet her. We were coming out of Pizza My Heart and met by three Santa Cruz police officers.
Now, did they greet you, offer you a piece of pizza?
No, they did not. They told me to stop right there. They had to call the worker, and they had to escort me from Pizza My Heart to here.
Because?
And through the crosswalk. They would not answer the question. I asked them, why? I was like, my stuff is back there. I was like, I have to get back.
What stuff was that?
You know, like my blanket and my sleeping bag and this stuff. You know, the backpack.
You're pointing to the stuff you're with.
They couldn't answer why I wasn't allowed to return to my belongings.
How far away did they take you from your belongings?
Well, I was at Pizza My Heart,
which
is across the street. And if it would have been for me, then she would have carried the baby, or I would have carried the baby to the crosswalk. You know what I mean? And one of us would have just walked right across the street to our stuff to make sure it was okay.
It's not illegal to walk across Pacific Avenue.
Yeah.
It's not jaywalking.
We don't do it with the baby. We try to use the crosswalk.
Fair enough.
But
Did they give you the option to walk across the street, or were you with the baby at the time?
We were with the baby at the time. And the point is, we were stopped and, like treated like common criminals.
to be able to cross the street. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... And then once they were over here, they completely interjected in the whole interview or in questioning by the CPS lady. That their capacity is a security detail for the CPS lady because she's a county employee. You know what I mean? And to make sure she's okay. Right. They're not in an investigative... They're not investigators. They're for CPS. You know what I mean? The local police.
Police officers as security detail for a county worker. Boy, this is the first time I've heard this. I don't doubt necessarily the truth of what this person is saying, but if it's true, it's kind of chilling to me. You don't need security officers in downtown Santa Cruz.
They're not investigators for CPS. So, and they interjected very, very...
forcefully?
No. They released information. They released private medical information of mine that is covered under privacy.
They released it too.
Being
CPS or the police?
No, the police revealed to CPS private stuff that they knew that isn't, you know what I mean? That's private medical.
Tell us what it was, but give us an example of what kind of stuff it was. Imagine thinking of some.
And CPS, for those who don't know, is Child Protective Services. And this is a homeless couple with a baby which is afraid of losing its baby to CPS. They didn't seem particularly abusive or dirty or probably poor because they were panhandling downtown.
Else with a similar situation.
Yeah.
Illnesses you have, a history of some kind of illnesses.
Revealing medical problems that were.